Thank you, Martin, for this introduction, and also thank you for inviting me to this exciting and inspiring place here. It's great to be here, and well, as you already mentioned, so we'll talk about face transitions today, and I have just a personal face transition behind me, so I married and changed my name from Zauner to Stauber, but I'm in the middle, so I have both names on here. So, and I'm actually also glad that I could count on the notorious weather here so that it started snowing on the weekend, because when I left Vienna, it was still spring-like temperatures, about 15, 20 degrees, which was kind of weird for Austria in the mid of November. So for me, winter has started now, and when I get back, we already have the nice Christmas markets with mulled wine that help us through the cold period. So anyways, today I would like to tell you about a new way that we have of looking at and understanding symmetry-breaking face transitions through the geometry of reduced density matrices. And the central object that we will revolve around will be convex sets generated by all possible reduced density matrices of a certain system, and we'll especially look at their lower dimensional representations, projections. And we'll see that the structure of these surfaces will tell us about the occurrence of symmetry breaking through the appearance of some special features on the surfaces. And this will lead us to the conclusion that symmetry breaking is essentially a consequence of the geometry of Hilbert space. And I will show you some examples, and we will start with spin 1/2 quantum systems on a lattice in 0, 1, and infinite dimensions. We'll also talk about models of classical statistical mechanics, namely the 2D easing and the Potts model on a square lattice. And we'll also look into a continuum system, namely the ideal Bose gas in three dimensions at finite temperature, where we will witness Bose-Einstein condensation. So to give you a first impression of what we will be looking at, this is an example of a convex set generated by all possible reduced density matrices of an infinite one-dimensional spin 1/2 chain, and we will see that the shape of these sets will be determined by the geometrical structure of Hilbert space. I will say what this means in a minute. We will see that the surface of this convex set corresponds to ground states of a certain Hamiltonian, and through that we can already extract quite a few useful informations about the thermodynamic quantities of this underlying Hamiltonian just from this convex set surface. And we'll especially see that the appearance of flat parts and ruled surfaces signal symmetry breaking, where the ground state is not unique, and we have the emergence of a connected order parameter. And so the idea of using reduced density matrices and their convex sets for studying phase transitions is not exactly new. It actually dates back to an idea by Gibbs in the late 1800s. And especially during the last few decades, people in quantum chemistry have used this a lot to study quantum phase transitions. But the new direction that we are adding is literally adding a new direction in these pictures, namely by adding an additional axis in these plots that enable us to see actually these flat parts and these ruled surfaces here that are a feature that signal the occurrence of symmetry breaking that leads us to the conclusion that essentially the geometrical structure of Hilbert space is responsible for the occurrence of symmetry breaking. Yes?
What's a ruled surface?
A ruled surface, glad that you asked. So I was also not familiar with this. A ruled surface is basically a surface that gets generated if you move a line through space. So a ruled surface is a surface where at any point you can find a line that goes through this point that lies completely in this surface. So the simplest example would be just a cylinder, where you just move, you know, a vertical line in circles. But you can also think of more complicated ones. And in this case, it's just, you know, taking this vertical line and moving it around.
It's the surfaces which are generated by taking a line and moving it through space.
Exactly.
And simultaneously maybe rotating.
Yes. You don't have to, but you can.
What's the extra
The extra axis here, in this case, it corresponds to the order parameter that is connected to the symmetry breaking phase transition. I mean, there you will see the most signature of symmetry breaking. I mean, I can talk about this more.
So what's the meaning of a point in this three-dimensional?
We will get to this. This is just a teaser, what you will, so we will, yeah. That's good. So we will work our way up to this, of course. So, to get started, let's start with a very pedagogical example of just density matrices of two individual spin 1/2 particles, which we can parametrize by 15 real parameters. And one possible way of writing such density matrix down is to expand it in the basis of Pauli matrices, where we would get single qubit contributions from the right one, for example, here. And we would get corresponding contributions from the left qubit. And we have two qubit contributions here. And the nice thing about this parametrization is that these numbers, so this alpha, beta, and so on, these numbers are exactly correspond to the expectation values of the terms that they stand in front of. So for example, the expectation value of x tensor z in this state would be exactly given by the number gamma. So for a density matrix to be physical, it needs to be positive. And you can already imagine that not all combinations of these 50 numbers will give you a positive matrix. So physical density matrix then sort of form a subset in this 15-dimensional space. And since they're a density matrix, this will form a convex subset. So I've kind of sketched this situation here. I mean, these two directions should represent 15 directions, but that's kind of hard to draw and also to imagine. So bear with me and imagine that this is 15-dimensional, and this is kind of the convex set of all possible two-qubit density matrices. So if we then were to impose some additional symmetries onto our density matrices, this will restrict this convex set of density matrices even further. So one possible symmetry that we could ask for is translation invariance, so that our density matrices are now reduced density matrices of a translation invariant chain. And this is actually related to the quantum marginal problem, where you're given a set of density matrices and you ask if they can be reduced density matrices of some global state. Another thing, so you could, for example, some of these density matrices that you have here, you could think of some examples that could never be a reduced density matrix of a translation invariant chain, for example, the singlet, which would be such an example. You could ask for some additional symmetries, for example, SU2 symmetry, you would get some other restricted set, or you could ask for a translation invariant along another second spatial dimension. So reduced density matrices of a translation invariant 2D lattice. And we'll actually deal with these three cases later on. So 15 dimensions are hard to deal with, imagine and draw. So let's look at lower dimensional projections. And especially let's look at two-dimensional projections of two-qubit reduced density matrices of a translation invariant chain. And let's choose, for example, all possible points of the observables xx versus z. So we just choose these two directions in our two-dimensional projection and try to determine the convex set, the projection of the convex set, and this is what you get. So all pairs, xx and z, all points within and on the boundary of this set, then correspond to valid reduced density matrices. Yes?
What do you mean by the density matrix of a translation invariant chain? You mean that the density matrix of the Wu system is invariant of translation, and then you project it?
Yes. So the underlying states all have to be translation invariant. And what it means that if along your chain, you would take the reduced density matrix here, it would look equal to the one here, equal to the one here, and so on.
Is that nearest neighbor?
Or is it? Well, yeah. That's okay.
It doesn't matter, actually.
It doesn't really matter. But in this case, yes, nearest neighbor. Uh-huh. If it's a chain, then we're talking about nearest neighbor reduced density matrices. Yes, exactly. So, right. So I have this boundary, and how do we actually get it? And for this, let's take a short excursion into elementary geometry, and let's look at lines in these pictures. So a line in this plot would be given by this equation here, where the numbers a and b would kind of determine you the orientation of the normal vector of this line here, and the number d would give you the distance of the line to the origin if this normal vector is properly normalized. So why are we looking at lines? Well, because we can interpret them as lines of constant energy for a Hamiltonian that is constructed exactly from these two observables that we chose to plot. So in this case, we get, educated guess, the quantum easing model Hamiltonian. And the expectation value of this Hamiltonian is then given by this equation here, which is essentially a line equation, where the parameters, the coupling parameters j and h, give you the orientation of the line, basically, in this plane. And the negative of the energy expectation value is the distance to the origin. And now you can see that all these points along this line correspond to states of equal energy. Yeah? And only along this cyan part, there are allowed states, because outside, we're outside of our allowed a convex set. So all these points here correspond to physical states that have all the same energy with respect to this Hamiltonian. And now you can think, OK, let's move this line a little bit up. Then we have some new line of states that all have the same energy, which is slightly lower than the one before. And if we push this out all the way to the edge, such that the line is tangent to this boundary, we have found this one state that is maximally far away from the center and thus has the lowest energy. So we have found the ground state of this Hamiltonian. So that means that all the points along this boundary correspond to ground states of a Hamiltonian that is given by the orientation of the tangent line through this point. Yes? Unique ground state if this tangent line touches this boundary only on one point. And this is exactly where we will get to. So you will see a counterexample in a minute. You already saw one, actually. What we just saw is that the surface of these convex sets correspond to ground states of Hamiltonians that are exactly defined by the choice of projection that we made. So for example, to determine this convex set, what you can do is just calculate all possible ground states of this Hamiltonian for all parameter combinations. But conversely, if we were given this surface, you would have immediate knowledge of all ground state expectation values for all parameter values. Yes?
Are you assuming that the Hamiltonian has to be
two-sided? In this case, yes. In this case, yes. But this is really just tailored to nearest neighbor Hamiltonians. You could also construct this for, let's say, three sites, so reduced density matrices.
Where do you fix, what do you fix? You can fix the range of the Hamiltonian, and then you fix the size of the density matrices that you're going to look at?
Yeah, it depends on what direction you're going. If you want to use the convex set to say something about Hamiltonians, then.
OK, so in other words, when you drew this convex set,
yes,
that was the convex set of reduced density matrices for ground states of Hamiltonians that are nearest neighbors.
Well, yeah, just on the surface, you have the ground states. Within, you have all kind of other states.
So when you gave us this two-dimensional plot,
yes,
it was attached to nearest neighbor
Hamiltonians. Well, it was first attached to nearest neighbor reduced density matrices.
That's what the plot, right, but the plot itself.
Exactly. So it's just that only after we have chosen our observables, this implies some certain Hamiltonian.
Oh, so the line that you drew is only the constraint from.
Yes, exactly.
From having a positive density matrix?
Right. Positive. It just so happens that also the surface corresponds to ground states of a Hamiltonian. So this is a very crucial and good point, actually. I'm glad you asked, because this set here exists without saying anything about Hamiltonians at all. We just, with these lines, we just made the observation that also the extreme points here correspond to ground states.
But you can find all the Hamiltonians, given that set, you can like,
yes, this is actually,
all
exactly, if we are given, so, well, just to be real quick, also from the curvature of this boundary, you could, you have information about the change of observables and you could extract susceptibility, so you know a lot about your physical system. And as you just said, this is just a projection of our original 15-dimensional huge object that we had. And we could also look at different projections, which would give us the ability to make claims about some other Hamiltonian. So depending on the directions of our projection, we could, for example, in this case, make claims about the XY Hamiltonian. So if, as you just said, if we had knowledge of the full 15-dimensional convex set, we have immediate knowledge about all possible nearest neighbor spin Hamiltonians. All ground states, all ground state expectation values, if we knew the full 15-dimensional set.
I guess what I'm missing is the connection to the whole Hilbert space. So in this first plot, you have two directions corresponding to expectation value of z and xx.
Yes.
And the line that you drew is determined by positivity of the reduced density matrix.
Yes.
But it has no reference to this density matrix being the reduced density matrix of a pure state of a larger system?
It has actually, because if you would draw this, if you would draw this for just two particle density matrices, two qubit density matrices, you would actually get the perfect circle.
Okay, so that was my question.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
This is not just a constraint of positivity,
No.
A constraint of positivity,
It's also reduced density matrices of a translation invariant chain.
A translation chain? So you're assuming it's nearest neighbors?
Yes.
In a translation invariant chain?
Yes.
So the global wave function has to be translation invariant?
Yes.
And that's already more information that refers to a wave function that will be the grounds.
Exactly. What we're actually restricting ourselves now is to a subspace of overall Hilbert space, only translation invariant states, for example. Yes. All right. So we have been talking about the quantum easing Hamiltonian, and we know there should be a symmetry breaking phase transition, but where is it? Where is symmetry breaking? So you get symmetry breaking now if you add an additional axis to these plots. And in our case, this is exactly the magnetization in X that we have to add, which corresponds to the order parameter of the symmetry breaking phase transition. And the corresponding three-dimensional set that we get then looks like this. You've already seen this. And the surface of this convex set will now correspond to ground states of a Hamiltonian where we have to explicitly add now this magnetic field term in X. Yeah? And so what were tangent lines before? So beforehand, these tangent lines gave us kind of the orientation of the tangent lines gave us the parameters for the Hamiltonian. Here, tangent lines turn into tangent planes. So for every point along here, you can look for the tangent plane, and the orientation of the tangent plane tells you for which Hamiltonian this point is the ground state of. Yeah? Just to mention, in this plot, so there's also a lower part, but it looks exactly the same as the upper part mirrored. So I only plotted the upper part because this plot is already busy enough as it is. And you can see that here we have these old directions, so x, x, and z, and this is the new axis that we added. And you also see that the old set that we had is included here. So this is the black line that goes around here. And so if we play the same game as before, so we can go along this black line. And here, along this black line, tangent planes have normal vectors that are completely within this xx and z plane. So your tangent plane will just go around like this. Yeah? This essentially means that we have magnetic field x0. So we're kind of looking in the bigger picture, but we're still looking at this original Hamiltonian. We just say, well, OK, this third direction is just 0. And so if we go along here and we reach the critical point here, which corresponds to this point here, we see that a ruled surface opens up. So we didn't see this in the plot before because we were just looking at this picture from the top. And you wouldn't see the opening up of this ruled surface if you didn't have this third direction. So and what actually happens on such a ruled surface is exactly what you mentioned before. Here, the tangent plane doesn't touch the convex set on a unique point, but on a whole line. That means that the ground state is not unique anymore. So every point along this vertical line here corresponds to a valid ground state. And what these states actually mean, they are, of course, a linear interpolation between the two maximally symmetry broken states at exactly this parameter pair. So the occurrence. Exactly. So there would be, of course, a corresponding state down here. And the whole ruled surface would go around here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So in your earlier plot, it's only the two-dimensional plot.
Yes.
Every point inside the contour was also an allowed density
matrix. It was an allowed density matrix, yes. And that's still the case.
You could have a surface coming out. So suppose you're in the interior of that curve and you go up along x-axis.
Sorry, where?
Suppose you're inside that contour.
Yeah, somewhere in this three-dimensional thing.
Mm-hmm. On the xy plane.
Okay. Yeah.
And
somewhere here.
You can also have a surface there. So somehow you seem to only plotted a surface.
Well, because we're talking about the surface. So inside there are like dense. So the states.
It has a lid on top, yeah.
Yeah, it has it. Okay. Well, okay. Maybe you don't see this really. There's like this blue lid on top here. So yeah. It's really. I should have made this movie actually. So thinking about making like flying with a helicopter around this so you could see this better. You will see a little bit of a different perspective on the next slide. So maybe that's more clear. So there is a blue lid on top. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly this ruled surface that gives us the degeneracy of the ground state, and that is a defining signature of symmetry breaking. And so you could now say, of course, well, we know there is symmetry breaking phase transition in the quantum easing model. We know that there is a finite order parameter if we go below the critical point. So we should expect something like this to happen. I mean, this is clear. We know this. And so if you just draw all these If you just draw the surface from knowing all the ground states, this is exactly what you get. But remember that we obtained this whole three-dimensional set from basically a three-dimensional projection of a whole 15-dimensional convex set of reduced density matrices. So, and this set existed way before we ever talked about any Hamiltonians. So you would see this ruled surface without ever talking about Hamiltonians at all. So you still have this ruled surface here that tells you, okay, if I look at the corresponding Hamiltonian, I should get symmetry breaking. And to give you further evidence, I created here a scatter plot of random states. So what I did here is I drew a very, very large number of random infinite matrix product states, so of translation invariant states on the chain. And then I measured the corresponding quantities here. And what I got is this cloud here. Of course, you get also the corresponding part on the bottom. And you can already see that we can sort of nicely qualitatively reproduce the whole convex set. So it kind of saturates at certain points better, at certain points worse. So here in the middle, the cloud is more or less homogeneously distributed. But here, exactly where we would expect symmetry breaking, they really amass around this top lobe here, and there would be a corresponding bottom lobe here. And we get almost no points inside here. So like on top of this part here up, you get almost no points. And you certainly don't get any points outside of the surface. So for it to be an approximation of the full convex set, you have to take the convex hull. And no matter how many points you will sample, you will always get this ruled surface here. And we obtained this plot without ever talking about any Hamiltonians at all. So that means that already, so this is kind of what I would talk about the geometrical structure of Hilbert space. So if you draw some states from some unitary ensemble, you get the distribution that is not completely uniform, but it looks very much peaked here. And you get this ruled surface structure here that tells you, okay, something weird is going on here. And indeed, this is exactly starting when we have this ruled surface is showing up.
So how do you include the information about
This is already in the thermodynamic limit. So I drew, so in infinite matrix product states, they just are a way of writing infinitely long states and already including translation invariants.
If you had the finite system,
yes,
then you wouldn't have this, that kind of degeneracy.
Exactly,
then
you shouldn't.
Time would not be strict.
You would expect that for a finite system, if you start very small, for example, with two qubits, we will see an example of this later, you almost get no structure that looks like this. And the bigger and bigger your system gets, the more and more this ruled surface will develop. And it will be only fully there if you take the full thermodynamic limit.
Right. Where is the information about the system size?
The system size is saying that I have an infinite string of MPS matrices in my state. There are methods for dealing with infinite states with matrix product states. It's actually a very natural way of dealing with infinite states that already have translation invariants.
So, if you want to put the finite size, then how would you do it? If you want to have, say, 60 sites, if you have something,
well, that what it basically boils down to is that if you want to calculate some local observable, then so well. You have your big quantum state, yeah, that has legs for all the sites. So this is kind of your physical state. And you want to measure some observable here. Then you have to, well, OK, let's say this is the Bra vector. And then you have to sandwich it with the Ket vector here on the bottom. OK? And what matrix product states do is that they kind of divide up this huge blob into many smaller blobs that are also connected by lines. Yeah, I don't want to go too much into the details. Anyways, all you need for this site is kind of the tensors that live on this site and kind of something that is an environment from all the contributions left and right. And in a finite system, this is just, you will see that this corresponds just of a matrix that is multiplied several times. So if you would have, let's say, a 10-site system, you would have this one site where your observable sits, and you have 9 remaining sites that all have kind of this same object that you have to multiply 9 times. And if you make this larger and larger, oops, sorry, if you make this larger and larger, then the product of this local object will get bigger and bigger, and only the dominant eigenvector will remain of this.
Is it right that this convex set depends on the system size?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This depends on the system size.
And then as the system size becomes larger, the convex set, does the set shrink, or does it expand?
The set will shrink.
It becomes smaller.
Yes, it becomes smaller.
Yes,
yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I just had to make sure that I'm going the right direction.
It's a different type of constraint. It's a different type of constraint.
Yes.
No more or less. There's still a constraint on 15 parameters. We're not just requiring this to be a pure state of the system, but transmission time, right?
Yes.
So it's a different set of constraints when you go from 20 sites to 21.
There should be a hierarchy of constraints, yes.
States, transmission by the stage of 20 sites are not a subset of.
Yes, rather the other way around.
No, there's no other way.
Okay.
So if this was just pure states,
mm-hmm.
then indeed the pure states of on 20 sites.
Ah, okay, pure states. Yeah.
The problem statement, the extra site is the pure state on 21 sites.
What I'm thinking about is that if you would draw these convex sets for a larger and larger system side sizes, then they would be consecutive subsets of each other.
But why?
Because you include mix. I think it's because you include all types of mixed states also, so you can.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Doesn't matter. But
yeah, I didn't really think so much.
This set, as Robert said, depends on the system size. So
yeah, indeed. So maybe I failed to emphasize what we are looking at here is really all in the thermodynamic limit so far. Yeah. Yeah.
So for finite system, that.
Exactly. From your physical intuition, you know that for a finite system, you don't have symmetry breaking, so you shouldn't see this rule surface. And indeed, this you won't see. So only if you make the system infinitely long, then. So what you would get is that these lines here, I will say what these lines are actually in a minute, they would kind of go into this, how would you say? So you. There would be lines that go all the way to here and then up. And it's exactly when you make this transition from finite to infinite, I don't know what that means, all these lines would immediately jump out here. This is what you would get. You will see a comparing picture later on. Maybe you can imagine it better then. Okay, so let's for now just look at a few of the features that you can extract once you are given this set. Yeah. So for example, you could extract critical exponents from the change of orientation of the tangent plane around the critical point. So how the orientation of the tangent plane changes around this point and how the upper boundary of the rule surface changes are in a relation. So I mean, you know what the solution should be. And indeed, if in this picture you were to plot this guy against this guy, they would coincide. So this derivative here is just kind of saying that we want the magnetic field term from here. And this is just the geometrical connection between the orientation of the tangent plane here and how this magnetization goes to zero. So about these blue lines, how I actually determined this convex set is, of course, I calculated all ground states for very many different values of the parameters. And I chose to go through parameter space along these blue lines. And what they mean is that along one of these blue lines, I fixed J and the magnetic field in X, and then I varied Z. So, and what this means geometrically actually is that if you fix J and HX, that means that you fix the normal vector of your tangent plane in this X, XX plane. So your tangent plane kind of, this B would be something like this. And then if you vary HZ, it would tilt like this. Yeah? So along this side, they're kind of tilted more or less that way, so they would go like this. If you go from down here up here, and on this side, they would be tilted a bit more to the other side. And if you go along the blue lines, it would go from here up like this. And the funny path that it takes is it's just that the surface of the convex set looks that way, that you have to go left for the tension plane to, you know, just tilt the way it should tilt. And the dividing line between these two cases is this red line here that I've plotted. It corresponds to zero coupling, easing coupling here. So the ground states are very simple. They're separable states. And this is exactly the line where the tension plane would be just straight from your perspective and then just tilt like this. So they're not tilted sideways like this, but really straight. And so from this red line, you can kind of determine where the antiferromagnetic and the ferromagnetic coupling would be. Yeah? And what you can also notice is that more or less all of the lines, they originate here, and then they go either to this point up here, even on the antiferromagnetic side, or, well, they take another turn and they go down here. But there's this one line in the middle that is a bifurcation line that divides the two, and it leads up, on, and it is for some special value of these parameters, where we choose J and HX that way and take the magnetic field in Z to zero. This will take you up to here, to this top plane, and you will get stuck here. And what this blue plane on the top actually is that there we have an exponential degeneracy of the ground state. And I hope I get the time to talk about this a little bit, because this is actually very interesting what's going up there, going on up there. So, but for now, let's continue. And well, we have talked a lot about 1D now, so let's talk about other dimensions also. And this is exactly the plot that relates different dimensionalities, as you asked. So one big step in one direction would be to go from 1D to infinite dimensions, because this is easy to do. So what happens in infinite dimensions is that every site is essentially the nearest neighbor of every other site, because everything is connected in an infinite dimensional lattice. So by the monogamy properties of entanglement, the density matrices need to be separable. So you have to just optimize overall separable density matrices to obtain the surface of this convex set. And the surface is then given by some semi-definite constraints. And you can obtain the surface via some semi-definite programming. Yeah, and I mean, one feature that you could extract from here is that as soon as you're on the ferromagnetic side, you immediately have symmetry breaking. Yes?
So for d equals 0, is that just two sites?
Literally? Yes, exactly. Exactly. Sorry. So for what I mean with d equals 0 is that really you have a point, yeah, or actually two, because you need two. So this is really just exact generalization of two spins. This is very simple. And as you said, of course, you should expect no rule surface. And indeed, you don't have a rule surface. And you have these lines that actually go all the way to the 0 point here, and then they jump up. And when you say, OK, let's interpolate between these two, which means that you make just your system size of your chain larger and larger, the density of these lines would get smaller and or smaller and smaller here. So they would be sparse and move apart more and more until all of a sudden the one that is in the center here jumps all the way down here. This is just what you would expect if you go to the thermodynamic limit.
The second case you'd have a sphere.
Yeah, you have a sphere in the projection, in the two-dimensional projection of XX versus C. So if you just go along this bottom line here, this is exactly a circle. Oh, no, not, you don't get the sphere. Because we're basically, so you're still basically looking at the full 15-dimensional set. But you just look at three dimensions of it. You make a three-dimensional projection. So it's not a slice, really a slice, but you really have
complex set is the 15-dimensional sphere.
Well, nobody knows what it really looks like.
You have only two spins. There's no other
complex. Ah, for two spins. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Actually, you're taking the intuition from a cube.
Yeah.
Spin,
yeah, right? But for two? It's also a, it's two qubits, so they behave differently. You know, you can have entanglement and everything.
And you want you consider only pure
state. No, these are really the, this is the convex set of all possible density matrices. Really, density matrices. Yeah. So here it's really just a constraint. Here you don't have any translation invariance constraint. It's really just the positivity of the two qubit density matrices. And positivity.
Okay.
And that is actually the non-trivial constraint that you have. Right.
Positivity would be a complex set. That's like a strong entity with your sphere. Or then bigger of a sphere. But locally, for one qubit, yes. For more than one qubit, then within that sphere.
So, and one thing that you can also see from these three plots is that there is kind of a hierarchy of dimensions. So the infinite dimensional set, is completely contained within the one dimensional set, which in turn is completely contained within the zero dimensional set. And this is exactly related to what we said earlier, that if you impose additional symmetry constraints, your convex set gets further and further restricted. Okay, where is this leading? Oh yeah, let's wrap up what we learned so far from the qubit convex sets. Namely, the shape of these convex sets are given by the geometry of Hilbert space. And what I mean by this is that in this case, we're, for example, restricting ourselves to translation variant states on an infinite chain. We saw that the surface of the sets are given by ground states of certain Hamiltonians that are defined by our choice of observables. So because we chose to plot XX versus C versus X, we are essentially claiming something about this very Hamiltonian, which we also learned about something yesterday, actually. And also about reduced density matrices, which look thermal or not. And in this case, who knows? And we also learned that at flat parts and ruled surfaces, the ground set is not unique. And these flat parts and ruled surfaces are defining signatures of symmetry breaking. And that essentially led us to the conclusion that the occurrence of symmetry breaking is essentially caused by the geometrical structure of Hilbert space. Yes.
So the ruled surfaces imply degenerate ground states.
Yes.
But the degenerate ground states do not imply symmetry breaking. They could be degenerate ground states.
Yeah, but well, in this case, you know that you have a connected order parameter.
Then there's
Yes, so my intuition is that, so how I understand this, as soon as you have degeneracy, you should have symmetry breaking of some kind. I mean, don't take me for granted that. I mean, what I mean with this is that there should be some quantity that quantifies where am I in my interpolation between degenerate ground states. For topological systems, we know it's not local. It is something very non-local. So loop operators, they are the order parameter for topological phase transitions. And for any phase transitions, what people always look for is what is the corresponding order parameter. So it's just that in this case, it's very easy because the order parameter is local.
So are there similar pictures being constructed for?
This would be, yes, this would be very interesting to do for different kinds of phase transitions. Yes, I agree. So, and what we also saw is that once we're giving the surface, we can extract a lot of information about the underlying Hamiltonian. So I think that this kind of plots are actually constitute a very natural and informative way of plotting phase diagrams. Because from this, you can extract much more information than from the usual phase diagram that you would draw for this model in the other way. So let's go to the second example that I promised you, and let's look at classical statistical mechanics. I mean, there you would think, okay, we don't have reduced density matrices anymore. What do we have here? Let's take a step back and say, okay, quantum phase transitions are driven by quantum fluctuations. Yeah? And what you usually always have, you have two non-commuting terms in your Hamiltonian which compete. Yeah? And once this one wins, and then kind of they're equal, and then the other one wins, and you have a phase transition. In classical systems, phase transitions are driven by thermal fluctuations. And the competition that you have is between the internal energy and the entropy in the free energy given by this. So these two guys, they always compete. So we should expect similar convex sets if we plot expectation values of all possible probability distributions of classical degrees of freedom. Yeah? And the surface of these sets would then correspond to thermal states or Gibbs states that extremize the free energy. So this would be the corresponding quantity to look for in classical mechanics. And this actually dates back to the idea that Gibbs had in the late 1800s. So he already kind of started drawing these kind of diagrams for classical systems. And so this is actually the set that you get for the 2D Ising model on a square lattice. So it's given by the Hamiltonian up here. And if you calculate the free energy, this is what you get here. And you again have a plane equation. No? So all points here on the surface are Gibbs states to a Hamiltonian given by these two parameters and the temperature that is given here. And the orientation of the tangent plane gives you these two parameters and the temperature. Well, you get a similar structure of this convex set than in the quantum easing case, but you kind of expect this because they're in the same universality class. So again, here you have a symmetry breaking phase transition where you go from the paramagnetic to the ferromagnetic case side. And what was the transverse? Yes?
Sorry, I don't understand what the extra index direction is.
Yes, I was just about to say what the extra index is. So in the quantum case, we had these two competing terms that say the XX interaction and the transverse field. And in this case, the competing term is now the entropy. So we have replaced the transverse magnetic field with the entropy in this case.
You first fix the temperature.
Yes.
And then you compute the free energy.
Yes.
And then use that expression to extract the entropy.
Yes, exactly. Indeed. And yeah, with tensor networks, you have a very natural access to the free energy. And you can actually draw these kind of diagrams. I don't know if you can actually do this with Monte Carlo. Extracting free energies is very hard, as I know. So again, you get, as I said, similar structures as in the quantum easing case. So you also get this top plane that corresponds to slightly different parameters here. And what took the limit, the place of the limit of the magnetic field in Z going to zero is now the temperature going to zero along this bifurcation line. And you're actually stuck here at a point with zero temperature, but a finite entropy. So you have some residual entropy at this point, which is again connected to an exponential degeneracy of the lowest energy state on this top plane. So here is then the example of the Q-state POTS model. And this plot I actually obtained just this morning. So this is very preliminary data. And so what you have in the POTS model is an interaction that is kind of weird. So you only get the contribution if neighboring spins are equal. And you don't get any contributions if they're unequal. It doesn't care how much they differ. You just get a contribution if they're equal. So the corresponding quantity that you have to measure here is actually the expectation value of this weird delta thing here. So this is the direction here. Then you again have the magnetization along the vertical direction. And you have the entropy here along this direction.
So is this a quantum model or classical?
This is a classical model. The classical POTS model in two dimensions.
How many dimensions?
Two dimensions on the square lattice. Yes.
Second edition, first order?
Yes. I chose the value of 5 because for any value q above 4, the phase transition is of first order. And what changes here is actually if you go along this line with your tangent plane, well, you have nicely unique thermal state up until this point. And before you go into this ruled surface part, you have actually a jump. So first order phase transitions come with a latent heat and the jump in expectation value. So if you go along here, your expectation value of this delta guy will jump from here to here, well, to here. And you also have a jump in the magnetization, boom. And what that means is that you actually have a whole plane here. So the tangent plane touches the convex set along this purple triangle that you have here. And all probability distributions that lie somewhere within this purple triangle are valid thermal states. In this phase. And this is exactly the case what you have at a first order phase transition, no, where you have the coexistence of phases.
So that's more than a ruled phase?
Exactly. This is kind of a doubly ruled surface because you can have two lines that are exactly in there. Yes, you can freely move anywhere within this purple triangle, which admittedly is not very big, but still. So you have this jump here. And then, I mean, you cannot really see it here, but the jump from here to here would be connected by a straight line. And then if you go on here, there's some curvature again. You don't really see this here. So this is the difference that you have for first order phase transitions with respect to second order phase transitions. So and what this also tells us is that actually to detect a first order phase transition, we would not even need this third direction of the order parameter. It would be enough to just look at the two-dimensional version because as soon as we have a straight line part from here to here, we know there the ground state is not unique and we have the coexistence of phases. I nevertheless looked at this three-dimensional version because it actually has some very nice properties, interesting ones. One additional thing that you can see is here on the antiferromagnetic side, so if this guy here is positive, if you have no magnetic field, so just a delta interaction, you go with the temperature to zero, what that means is actually, so you're looking for all possible configurations such that no neighboring spins are equal. For the ferromagnetic side, these guys want to be equal. So you have the fully polarized states here on this side somewhere. But on this side, They just have to be unequal. It doesn't matter how they differ, they just have to be unequal. And that is related to the coloring problem. How many different colorings can you put on your system of spins such that no neighboring spins are colored the same way? And of course, the higher Q is, the more of these configurations you have. And that leads you again to an exponential degeneracy of the lowest energy state and residual entropy. If you add some magnetic field, then some colors are more favorable than others, and you get this rule surface that actually opens up here. So this is an additional feature that you get in the POTS model. So, and the third example that I would like to show you is the is a continuous system, namely the ideal Bose gas in three dimensions at finite temperature. So what we would expect, what we would like to look at here is Bose-Einstein condensation, and the related order parameter is the expectation value of the field operator here, so the bosonic field operator. So we should explicitly add this to our Hamiltonian. And we are actually simulating now this Hamiltonian just at the fixed particle density of 1. And we are at finite temperature again, so the surface of these points, surface of these sets are again given by thermal states. So we're again, so all these points are points that extremize the free energy. And these gentlemen here have solved this system with this symmetry breaking term, and you can look in their paper to extract how to calculate all these expectation values, including the entropy. And this is the resulting set that you get. And well, here you again have a rule surface, which signals symmetry breaking and the occurrence of Bose-Einstein condensation with a finite value of this order parameter here. An additional feature of a continuous system here is that the convex set is not bounded on this side. So it goes on to infinity on this side because the kinetic energy is not bounded. So you can essentially take any value. But still, of course, the whole set is convex. And also the lines, the blue lines that we had here look slightly different than in the cases I showed you before. And this is because we followed here our G flow lines. So you can exactly solve the RG flow equations in this case because it's a free theory. And so the RG flow of the relevant parameters, so the inverse temperature and this coupling parameter, is given by these flow equations. And we chose different directions, so different starting points of these guys, and then you get different RG flow lines. So the arrows, of course, correspond to which direction this whole flow is going. So I'm not sure if how we're doing with time. I mean, for the top planes, I would need like another 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Yeah? I mean, we already passed for something. Okay. So we said, I told you that at these top planes, we have an exponential degeneracy of ground states. And so let's look at what the corresponding Hamiltonian for the tension plane up there actually is. It looks that way. And it's a classical Hamiltonian because you only have x terms in there. That means that the eigenstates of these Hamiltonians are all product states in the x basis. But still, we find that the ground state subspace is exponentially degenerate. So there are exponentially many product states that are good ground states for this Hamiltonian. And now let's look at why that is. We essentially have two terms where the first term favors antiferromagnetic order. So the Niel states would be a good candidate for this term. And the second term favors the all spin up state. Yeah? So let's see about the energy density of these two cases. So for a Niel state, the bonds are happy, yeah? But the downspin is unhappy, whereas the upspin is happy. So these two contributions from the magnetic field, they just cancel, and the two bonds are happy, and we get an energy density of minus 2 over 2 sides. Now, on the other hand, for the completely polarized state, the bonds are unhappy. No? So we have to pay an energy penalty, but at the same time, those both upspins are both happy, and in total we get the same energy density over two sides. So from this we already see that these two states are equivalent. So that means that these both terms exactly at this value of the magnetic field are equally powerful. But what you get additionally is what happens if you flip one of these spins? The thing is that you make the bonds happy, but this one spin unhappy, and it just turns out to be that it again has the same energy density. So that means we can start from the fully polarized state and start flipping single spins here and there. The only thing that we shouldn't do is flip two spins that are exactly next to each other, because then we have to pay a lot of energy. So these are kind of the only configurations that we don't want. As soon as we have neighboring down spins, this is something that is not a ground state. But everything else is an allowed ground state. And it actually happens that the dimension of the subspace grows like the Fibonacci sequence with system size. So if you make the system larger and larger, the ground state subspace grows like the Fibonacci sequence. And this is actually related to the computational space that you have for these golden chain models of interacting Fibonacci anions. So I found this very interesting that you have this classical Hamiltonian on top of your convex set and you get Fibonacci anions. I don't know. This was a very, very funny connection. What you now would like to do is to determine the boundary of this top plane, no? Because you can take any arbitrary superposition of these exponentially many many states in this subspace, and you can get some arbitrary expectation values. But what is really the extent? How far can you go out? And what you would like to do is you can imagine that as soon as we add some teeny tiny perturbation to this top plane Hamiltonian, you immediately, so if you perturb it slightly to that way, you immediately jump all the way to the edge of this top plane. And it depends on what way you kind of tilt your Hamiltonian, where you will end up. So what you would like to do is to just add this very tiny perturbation to your Hamiltonian. And the smart way to do is actually to do degenerate perturbation theory. So what you do in degenerate perturbation theory is that you first diagonalize your perturbation Hamiltonian in your degenerate subspace. And in our case, it just happened to be the ground space. So we're looking for the ground state of this perturbation guy within this Fibonacci subspace. So you have to project this Hamiltonian onto this degenerate subspace. And one way of doing it is, well, you end up basically with this guy here, which is essentially, if you, you know, multiply it all out, you have a three-body interaction. So what I did now is I calculated the ground state of this projected Hamiltonian. And the parameter that kind of controls where you will end up on the edge is just the ratio between these two numbers, alpha and beta. It doesn't really matter how big they are because you're in your restricted subspace anyways. So if you vary this alpha over beta, you can go from here up to here, and you have an exact representation of the boundary of your top plane.
This you did with DMRG again.
This I did with some ground state MPS methods, yes, indeed. For the classical models, so for the spin easing model and Potts model on the 2D square lattice, it works similarly. So you're there, the good configurations are also the ones where every downspin is surrounded by upspins, but now you have four nearest neighbors instead of two nearest neighbors. For the Potts model, you kind of don't have up and down spins, but since you have an applied magnetic field, you are kind of on the upper edge of your allowed state space. So you, the down up is replaced by q minus one and q. So your degenerate ground space here are just all configurations where you have at least one q minus one spin that is completely surrounded by a q spin. Okay, and the perturbation Hamiltonian in this case is very simple, just a magnetic field term. But you have to simulate this guy within this degenerate ground space. And so it really is kind of the same idea as in the quantum case. And with the parameter that controls where you go along the edge now is magnetic field here times the inverse temperature. So there's like one parameter only that you have. And if you vary this, then you can go from down up here. And here you get the same thing. So and there's one additional plane in the Potts model that was related to this coloring problem. And for q equals 3, this point, there's actually an exact solution due to Baxter and, of course, Leap, who else, which is the residual entropy of square ice. So there is an exact solution in the case q equals 3. And I looked at what I get with my restricted search in the subspace, and I can reproduce this up to machine precision. But what I can do is I can do this for arbitrary q. So this is the value that I get for q equals 5. And I don't know if anybody ever calculated this. So this is a nice byproduct. And so here you are restricting your subspace to all these different coloring configurations, where all the allowed configurations are the ones where no neighboring spins have the same color. And then you just simulate again this magnetic field Hamiltonian within this degenerate subspace. And then you get this plane. Yes. And if you go to a large magnetic field, you will again end up with the same situation where the highest spins are the most favorable ones. And you connect to this top plane where we exactly had the subspace where we only had alternating configurations between Q and Q minus 1. OK. To wrap it all up, actually, I know that was a lot of information. Thank you for bearing with me. What I showed you were a lot of convex sets for reduced density matrices and also marginal probability distributions for classical models. We saw that the surfaces of these convex sets correspond to ground states or Gibbs states, and that rule surfaces or flat parts signal symmetry breaking. That means that the ground or the Gibbs state is not unique. And this led us to the conclusion that symmetry breaking is essentially a consequence of the geometrical structure of Hilbert space or the space of probability distributions. And what we could do with this possibly in the future is to, of course, look at convex sets for other models of interest, like the XXC Hamiltonian or the Hubbard model. You would not expect any phase transitions in the Hubbard model, but still it would be interesting to have this phase diagram picture. And of course, in higher dimensions, for example, D equals 2. I mean, there it is very hard to do ground state calculations because you would need some PEPS algorithms, which are very involved. But you could still, for example, draw random states and try to make a scatter plot. This is much less costly and has essentially the same complexity as finding ground states in 1D. So I could try to generate some scatter plots here. And of course, looking at all other types or different types of phase transitions, such as Kostelitz-Dowless or topological phase transitions or many body localization phase transitions. But there one would have to see what is the proper order parameter for this and how would you actually plot these kind of things. And let me just mention that there was actually some work earlier this year by people actually here in Waterloo, and they looked at exactly these convex sets for symmetry-protected topological phases. So they made plots that look exactly like this. They even chose the same colors. For symmetry, so for essentially for spin one chains that had some, you know, edge freedom. So there's some paper on symmetry protected topological phases if you're interested. Well, with this, I'm now really at the end of my talk, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Degenerate ground state is just a Schrödinger cat state of 4 up and all down. Right?
Yes, in the quantum easing, yes. Exactly. It's just an interpolation between the two maximally symmetry broken.
For the one symmetry broken case, boson case.
Yes.
So you're breaking the continuous symmetry. Probably there are a lot more states.
I guess so. Yeah, one thing that I'm actually not really sure is how you would see the degeneracy of the ground state just from looking at the rule surface or at the flat part. Yeah, it doesn't look that way. I mean, the rule surface in this case really looks very much the same. I mean, you would probably have to look at scatter plots because in the one scatter plot that I showed you for the quantum easing case, we saw that we had some very different behavior around the rule surface, where we had a degenerate ground state, then close to this top plane, where we also had degenerate ground space. But there, we didn't really see much of a signature that we really have this division up into two lobes. And maybe that's a signature that, I mean, as soon as along this plane, all the states are kind of still homogeneously distributed, you have so many ground states that you don't really see this division. So there's, do you see what I mean? It's just in the other case, you have kind of these two symmetry broken states. One is up and one is down, and you really have a division of your scatter plots into these two cases. And if you imagine you have exponentially many, then you would also fill the parts in between somehow. So to boil it down, in the case for Bose-Einstein chain condensation, I would expect that you would kind of saturate also the root surface in a scatter plot. Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions?
So in the kernel state, okay,
yes.
Can you repeat what's the meaning of the interior of the convex head? So you said that the boundaries are given by Gibbs states.
Yes.
And what's inside?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I'm thinking that they should be just any other probability distribution.
Compatible with what? Oh, so global probability distribution?
Yes, exactly. And,
so you're restricted by positivity of the global. These are still marginal. You're looking at
yes, those are marginal, actually. Exactly. Any other marginal distribution that comes from a global probability distribution. But it's actually not so. So one thing that kind of bothered me is that temperature only makes sense, of course, for thermal states. So what does it mean for the points inside? So we had like this line picture before in the quantum states, and so we had these lines through the convex set, and if you push it all the way out, you get to the ground state. And you could ask like a similar thing: what happens if we put the plane through our convex set? What are actually the states?
Fluctuations away from.
Yeah, but then the temperature doesn't make sense because the temperature only makes sense if you have a thermal state. So probably it is just a number that gives you something, but only when you are really talking about the tangent plane, then this number becomes the temperature, has the meaning of the temperature.
Right,
that's what I would think.
Right. You could have a distribution with the same average energy as a thermal state.
Yes.
So more
fluctuations. Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Another question is, can you put more in context this whole approach, right? So you started with a nice picture, a teaser.
Yeah.
And you said, from this nice picture, which shows possible expectation values for reduced density matrices, which characterizes reduced density matrices coming from a pure state, say, of a dimensional invariant chain. You are able to read lots of things. You could find that each point at the boundary of this convex set corresponded to the ground state of transition invariant Hamiltonian with nearest neighbor interaction and so on. And you could even determine what the Hamiltonian was. But so this looks very interesting. But are you proposing to use that as an approach to doing something?
I think it's just a very nice new connection about this whole thing. So as I said, people use reduced density matrices to look at phase transitions for quite some time, but the new direction that we added is kind of finding out that the underlying 15-dimensional convex set kind of generates you these rule surfaces. So this generates you the possibility of having symmetry breaking in the connected Hamiltonian in the first place.
Okay.
So it's not that the Hamiltonian is there and it has symmetry breaking. This is why a Hilbert space has to look that way, but it's basically the other way around.
If you look at reduced density matrices coming from wave functions on the
yes.
Large space, they'll have this structure.
Exactly.
But are you proposing this as an approach to doing something?
Well, I would think it would be a very nice way of using these pictures as phase diagrams because there's just much richer information in them.
Is it obvious how to compute these diagrams?
Well, if you can compute the ground state, then yes.
So suppose you consider an infinite chain.
Yes. So if you were able to draw random states efficiently and then calculate observables, then you could kind of just, you know, let your computer run for days and days and days and fill this scatter plot. And from this, get a better and better approximation of your whole convex set. So, of course, you could kind of, if you didn't know what your order parameter was, you could just choose some random third direction. And as long as the corresponding observable has some non-zero overlap with the true order parameter, you will see some signature. But admittedly, it will not be very large. So, and then you could kind of optimize over all different directions. So if you would say, in the spin case, your order parameter would be some local, like really one qubit order parameter, then you just optimize all directions on the block sphere. And at some point, your your structure will open up maximally, and then that means that the corresponding direction corresponds to the right order parameter. So in principle, you could use this to optimize over order parameters. Yes?
With regard to the scatter plot,
yes.
Sort of an image of the scatter plot, and you had the original picture sort of surrounding
it. Yes.
If you didn't have that original picture, would it be obvious that there was a real surface? Because it looked like sort of curved inward and it didn't touch the real.
Yeah,
surface.
But the thing is, what you have to do then is take the convex hull, no?
Yeah.
Because, okay, let's go back to. Because when you're really on the very outside, so you will have a point here, and you will have a corresponding point down here somewhere, then every point along the line in between them is also a valid density matrix. So
you end up throwing out a lot of the data.
Exactly. I just know that I can just connect all points in there and fill the, and take the lines between all these points. These also correspond to valid density matrices.
Is there a way to, I don't know, bias the simulations so that you only find the ones that are close to the
right? Right, the random search could be directed so that it's looking directly for extremely small.
Yeah, what I noticed actually is if you use very small bond dimension, so in this case, this is drawn with bond dimension 4, you already get all the points that lie out here. And this is kind of clear because out here what you have is a product state. This is the fully polarized state. So in this case, it just happened to be that you already get all the stuff that you need from low bond dimension. If you go to higher and higher bond dimension, drawing from the unitary ensemble just means that you will most probably have points that are very much in the center here. And then if you go to higher and higher bond dimension, you will get stuff that lies also here, but it's just very improbable.
So you could have standard with product states, which is very easy to cover.
Exactly. What I just wanted to show is that really in this cloud, you get this lobe coming here, this tongue sort of going up and going down. And if you go with to higher and higher bond dimension, of course, you would be able to go also closer and closer to the critical point where you know you would need, well, infinite bond dimension. So of course, you would have to do this if you did it properly. You have to do it for infinitely many states with all different bond dimensions up to infinity. Then you would be able to fill it all. But what I'm seeing here is that you already get a very good qualitative approximation with very low bond dimension. Yes?
Sorry. I have a perhaps a general question. In all books of quantum statistical mechanics or more mathematical physics,
yes.
There is a statement that when you have existence of several phases, like in symmetry breaking, it's associated to the existence of superselection sectors, which means different representation of the algebra of operators.
Yes, this is more. I'm not really familiar with this.
That's mathematically very well defined.
So yes.
Can you give an idea of how to interrelation between what you are doing as an approximation scheme and this mathematics or mathematical physics formulation?
So I know that mathematical physicists never like to talk about infinite states because the Hilbert space is not well defined for infinite spin chains and stuff like that. So they really always look at operator algebras, as you said.
Yes, but there is an underlying Hilbert space.
Yes, but they always look at restrictions. No, they look at operators with finite support. And that's basically what fixes it, as far as I understand. I'm not a mathematical physicist, so. I cannot really say very much about this, what the connection is to these super selection things. Sorry. I mean, from what I can say is, I mean, my intuition to this is it's kind of related to what we discussed. If you make this chain larger and larger and larger, you kind of have these lines at some point jump out. And you know that if you looked at symmetry breaking from the traditional point of view, what you would have to do is you take your Hamiltonian with a very small finite magnetic field applied, and then take the thermodynamic limit, and only then take the magnetic field to zero. And this is exactly what you also see here. Yeah. So what we should be actually close to this, no? Here. So what this means is if you did it the wrong way, so you said you start with zero magnetic field and then take the thermodynamic limit, you would be exactly along this line here.
Yes.
Yeah? And then you make it bigger and bigger. And what actually only happens is that the lines that are slightly above it, that they will at some point jump out. but the line on the bottom. It will just be deformed to not go, you know, in a circle, but it just goes like this. So you will kind of remain in this symmetric subspace. So only if you are kind of in slightly above this bottom plane here, you will end up somewhere up here. Indeed, indeed. So I don't know if this is the connection that you meant to this superselection. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Okay. So there are no more questions. Let's thank Valentin again.
Thank you.